Welcome to Under the Radar, a show about independent iOS app development. I'm Marco Arment.
And I'm David Smith. Under the Radar is usually not longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. So today I want to talk through some things that I recently sort of had to work through in a big update that I did to Pedometer++. And specifically, it was dealing with a feature that I intentionally, but I'm not sure if wisely, but I intentionally decided not to implement in the big update that I shipped at the end of last year. And specifically, that update had a lot to do with the ability to download offline hiking maps before you go out for walks. You know, so if you're going to an area that doesn't have great connectivity, you have the ability to download your map ahead of time so that you can use it, use the navigation and planning features inside of Pedometer++, even when you're, you know, out somewhere else. But in building that feature, which has been very well received, and you know, I've been very happy with the way that the feature turned out. When I built that, I only allowed you to download maps. I provided no mechanism whatsoever to remove maps that you had downloaded, which is a bit strange in some ways that that was like what I ended up doing. But it was one of these situations where I had a lot of challenges in coming up with a way to do downloaded maps. That I think there's lots of issues, and I think maybe even talked about this on a couple, you know, show you know, months ago.
We did,
but it's the thing that is so tricky about this problem is like how you're solving like three different problems at the same time and very different use cases. Are you going out for a hike that you know you're going to do a particular route, and so you want to download the maps around that route, and then how wide around that route? Are you trying to download maps for a particular area, just like around you? But anyway, the end solution, which I think works really well, that I have now, where I have this sort of semi-zoomed in map, but not too much, that you can choose sort of blocks to download, which I find is very intuitive, works really well, or you can download the maps along a route. But it works well because it's very user-focused in terms of it's very much about what are you doing today. It's all centered, you know, it's based on where you are physically, and it's very much set up to the concept of I'm going to go on this hike, I know what I'm doing, or I know vaguely where I'm going, I'm going to download it. But the deleting and sort of handling the deletion side of that, I turned out to be something I found really complicated because I think that mechanism that I have in there now works well on the download side, but doesn't really work very well on the delete side. And I tried a bunch of prototypes back, you know, last December when I was building this, and I just couldn't come up with something that I liked. And so I got to this point, and this is, I think, the topic that I sort of want to talk about, is this. I decided, you know what, I'm going to ship this incomplete, and I'm going to, A, make sure that the feature is actually well received, that people like it, that it's intuitive, because the way in which I would solve this problem, not that I knew the solution at this point, but I knew that whatever the solution I wanted, it needed to sort of coordinate well with the downloading part of this. And so if I end up changing that because I get lots of feedback that it's super confusing or doesn't work well, or it's, you know, I'm going down this road, that would be problematic, or I'd be building something that would be incongruous there. Or, I mean, there was a slightly naive part of me that hoped that like inspiration would strike, and I would just suddenly have this magically better solution for it. But ultimately I was just like, you know, I was getting stuck. I was getting to a place that it was the last feature on my to-do list and I didn't know how to solve it. And it was one of those, I could spin my wheels on this for weeks or months or who knows how long, or I could just punt it and say, you know what, I'm not going to ship with this feature. And in the end, I think that was fine. And I think there's something interesting about this, about deciding whether a feature is missable. Like you can just ship the app with sort of this incomplete feature, and it'll be fine. You know, and I think of, you know, they seem like, Overcast. If you had the ability to download podcasts, but not delete them, I don't think you could get away with that, like, because fundamentally, like, organizing your files is one of the core, you know, functionalities of that app. Whereas for this, it's like you download these maps, and basically the downside is that there's some extra files hidden away that you can never see, that are taking up space on your iPhone, which isn't great. Like, I totally wish that I wasn't able, didn't have to have this consequence to a user if they download these massive sets of maps that there's no way for them to get rid of them, but it wasn't impacting the actual core functionality of the app. I think that was the thing that I was like, it's fine. As long as the core functionality of your app is doable and you can ship features that are on the sort of the sides of things that don't, you know, that aren't complete and that create these opportunities. And I think it's maybe some is being honest with yourself that you are going to go and fix it. I knew eventually I needed to solve this problem.
Well, did you? I mean, like, how much space are we talking?
So my largest mapping set, which is for the entire Lake District of the in the United in the UK, which is, I don't know, it's like 1,000 square miles or something, was about 2 gigs.
Oh, okay. That's significant. Yeah, because I was going to say, like, you know, with podcasts, it's necessary because you can accumulate a large podcast collection on your phone, and that does take up, you know, non-trivial amounts of space. Whereas, like, you know, I feel like a lot of tendency for us as nerds might be to over-optimize for this and to provide, you know, UI to delete things that are, like, you know, 100 megs or something, which, like, is, like, logically a lot of space, but on a phone, like, you're never going to notice that compared to, like, one app update from Uber or something like that, right? But the other thing I wanted to ask is, like, could you theoretically rely on iOS's purgeable storage system for this?
So, no. And specifically because once you've downloaded a map, I need from the user's perspective, it is it must be reliably there in the future.
Oh, yeah, of course. That makes sense.
Because if they downloaded something and expect it to be there, then even if it's been a few weeks and they've had it, you know, they downloaded a bunch of movies that took up space. And so the purgeable thing, you know, Watchdog kicked off. I don't want it to go and download these files. So as far as the system is concerned, they are set up as though they are like user documents that are not deletable, are absolutely, you know, must stay there because in theory, like, it's a safety concern even that, like, someone is expecting a file to be there.
Yeah. You could, like, take a picture on the top of a mountain and that kicks off the purge and you lose your entire map.
Yes. And like that would not be good. That would very much not be a desirable outcome. And so, yeah, so I had to do something to deal with it. I couldn't rely on the system to you know, be purging these files or managing them, which is, I think, in a lot of ways is something that you could reasonably do for a lot of caches. You know, if you were viewing this more as a cache than as a user feature, because that was one of the big changes I made is previously in the version before I did the offline mapping UI, I did cache the user maps there, but because I was making no guarantees to the user, in that case, it was that kind of like purgeable, you know, sort of caching store that could come and go at any point. And the user, I was making no, you know, expectations with the user that what they were doing would have a persistence. And while it did persist for most of the time for many people, because unless you happened to download tremendous amounts of, or like you had to physically visit all of these places. So if you were like, I don't know, hiking for, you know, hours and hours every day, like you're doing a through hike of the Appalachian Trail, maybe you could have accumulated gigs of cached maps. But for most people, it just would never have gotten to that because you had to physically go to these places. Whereas now you have the ability to, you know, in one button push, you could download, you know, areas, you know, hundreds of square miles of mapping tiles. And so it was a very different problem once I reached that point. But I think it's one of these things, though. It's like it's okay to not ship something complete, which I think is weird as something that I think very often we think about our designs as wanting to be complete. And I think the difference, this is just one of these things that is, you know, bouncing around in my head this week as I shipped this update, was this, like, it's that difference between it's better for something to be missing than to be sort of bad, I think, generally, that, you know, what I didn't want was to ship a bad implementation of this. And we can talk through some of the actual things that I eventually was able to do to this. But it's like, I think it was better to wait and only ship something when I could actually be confident that it was good, that I'd found the solution, that I wasn't just trying to shoehorn some solution into this problem because I felt like it was, you know, the app wasn't complete without it. It's like, it's better for it to be complete. And it's like, as far as I know, I think I had one report in the last like 4 months, 5 months that this app has been out there that people were like complaining that they couldn't download the maps. And so like it turns out that was the right choice, that missing this feature was fine until I could be confident that I actually had the best solution. And I feel like this is, I mean, it's one of these things I feel like we often run into with the way we talk about Apple approaching problems is they don't necessarily, they tend to not ship sort of half-baked solutions. They tend to wait until they're, I guess, fully baked. And once they're fully baked, then they release them rather than sort of only, it's like, it's better for it to be missing and, you know, just not there than to ship the wrong thing and have to deal with that in the future going forward.
Yeah, and it takes a certain level of patience and a little bit of gusto, I'd say,
sure,
to be willing to do that. And the thing is, like, you can do that badly and it can blow up in your face too. Like, because it, the reason it takes a bit of courage to ship, you know, to ship something that's lacking in certain features or that's incomplete is that you got to be really sure that's the right move, because you're going to be judged by your customers and by reviewers. If you're lucky to get reviews and stuff like that, you're going to be judged by what's there when you ship it. And like that, like those one-star reviews or those press blog posts or whatever could be there for months or years afterwards as what people see when they search for your app. So you have to really be sure that that whatever you are intentionally omitting or deferring is not that important and is not like that, that not that many users are going to go looking for it, expecting it to be there. And so I think in your case, I think you did find that balance, and your feedback shows that. But certainly this is not like a blanket lesson that like, oh, just ship without half your stuff and it'll be fine later. It's like, well, think about it first. Like, be a little careful about what you are omitting before you make that leap. And I think something like this where it's like, I'm accommodating an edge case. I think that is a good area where that's usually a safe move.
Or similarly, I think there's an element of waiting until it's like this problem would get worse over time as people download more maps. And so it isn't a problem the first week I ship the app. It's a problem months later when they have lots and lots of maps. And so it becomes this, in some ways you can have been, there's sometimes also benefits where you can omit a feature that you know won't be a problem until later. As long as you're, you know, disciplined in actually getting it shipped before it becomes a problem, you can potentially also do that as well.
Yeah, or it could be, you know, some kind of like technical detail. Like if I built a search index with every episode you ever viewed in Overcast, and I just never deleted anything from that search index, that wouldn't be a problem. It would be a couple hundred megs for a decent sized podcast collection for a little while, but then after 10 years, that could be a few gigs. And so like you'd have to have some mechanism eventually, but you could get away with it for a little while and it'd be fine.
Yeah.
All right, we're brought to you this episode by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. So ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent survey by Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets for you. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/under the radar. Just go to Indeed.com/under the radar right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/under the radar. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Our thanks to Indeed for their support of this show and Relay FM.
So the actual solution I came up with, which is probably the next thing that's worth talking into, I think is interesting as well, insofar as the reason I was stuck and the reason I felt like I needed to postpone this feature or omit it from the start is because of this, there was a step in the middle that, like, you know, it's like I had the problem. I sort of knew what I wanted the solution to be, but in the middle there was the step that was like, you know, would have just like in my notes would have just written as like, you know, do the magic, like do the like there's this thing of what I would, you know, because ultimately what I want is to be able to present the user with a clear list of the areas that they've downloaded as offline, but they've been downloading maps kind of higgledy-piggledy however they want. Whenever they were moving around, you know, there's all kinds of different mechanisms by which they can download them. And so I didn't want this to be this issue. And this is the thing, the reason I was going down this road is I get very frustrated with other apps, like say even Apple Maps or Google Maps or one of those when you have offline map sets, is you go to a similar place multiple times. And you end up with these like weird overlapping rectangles of, you know, this trip I went to this place and so I downloaded it over here and then this one over there. And you end up with these multiple map sets that sometimes overlap, sometimes don't overlap. And if you delete one, will it delete the other map set, even if it overlaps or intersects? Like, you end up with these really awkward questions that I just didn't like that kind of UI, but I wanted the conceptual sort of version of, you know, do I want to download the maps or delete the maps that I've downloaded for this particular place. And to the magic part is like coming up with that list of places that you have maps for, because, you know, they aren't specifically, the user is not choosing the places. I need to do the magic to come up with them. And so that was the end. The end was like the reason I pushed off is because I didn't know how to do the magic, or wasn't sure what the magic would look like. But in the end, I think I was actually able to get there. And I mean, and functionally, what I do at a technical level now is I look through your offline mapping, you know, tile sets, and I do run an algorithm that sort of cleverly groups them together into what seem to be, you know, related places, you know, geographically, and into clusters that you can then look at and delete. So if you, you know, went to a trip in whatever, you went to the Yosemite Valley, and your first time you only stayed down in the valley, but then the next trip you went and climbed Half Dome. And so now you have this extra sort of set of maps that extend out from your first set. Those will become, you know, a single set, and that becomes your Yosemite set. Or, you know, but if you only visited a place once, or you only explored a very small area, it'll just group that together and say that that's a particular set. And it's like, that was the end, the magical step that I think was transformative in making this into something that works, where I can give you that kind of grouped UI, easy to delete, easy to manage, you know, make it very easy to just, you know, say, oh, well, you know, I don't want these maps from Yosemite because I'm not going to be there anymore. You just hit delete and it'll clear them all out, rather than you having to manage all of the multiple trips you may have gone there or the different places. It's sort of this slightly smarter grouping mechanism. And once I was able to do that, like working out technically how to do that magic, then I had now I had the UI I wanted. I could do it in a very performant way. I could, like, there's all these things that, you know, were the hard part that I just needed that data. And I think so often it was also the sort of the confirmation that the version of downloading was very well received. And so I was confident that I needed a solution that didn't require the user to choose and name and manage the areas themselves. Because that was the thing that I was trying to stay away from, and it seemed like it worked, and it seems like it's really been very well received. Because obviously, if the end solution was that I needed to end up doing what Apple Maps and Google Maps do, where you build these like named areas and you have all these overlapping rectangles, and if I had to go down that road because that's what users ultimately really wanted and demanded, then like the deleting problem is super easy in some ways. You just like delete the thing that the user, you know, tells you to delete. But in my case, that wasn't the case. And so once that was confirmed by user experience, then I just needed to do the work to build an algorithm to solve the, you know, UI problem that I was facing.
Yeah. And the UI that you came up with, I think what's great about like the mechanic that you found and implemented here is that when you see it, it looks totally obvious. Like, of course that's how this should be done. And that's like one of the great things about good design is that that's like the result of good design always seems so obvious that no one quite appreciates the iteration and thought that went into it. Like, because what you arrive at is like, oh, of course, this is easy. Like, this makes total sense. This is the only way it could possibly be done. It is that obvious. But it might have taken you quite a lot of iteration and time to get there. But yeah, like, and I like how you really are focusing on getting things working, getting things shipped, and getting things out there, even if it is not the most like technically ideal solution at that moment. Because that's what indies have to do a lot of the time. I mean, that's what all companies have to do a lot of the time, honestly. Sure. But you know, like that so often holds us back. Like we might optimize, you know, premature optimization is the root of all delayed projects. We often try to optimize for things that, you know, for technical purity or elegance at levels that it doesn't matter. And that's not to say that there are no levels that it does matter. Like, you know, one of the major things I'm working on with the Overcast rewrite is performance when you have very large podcast collections. The existing Overcast app has been out there for 10 years. Is really not very performant at all in certain areas once you have, if you have like a few hundred podcasts that you've ever listened to or subscribed to. And that's something that, like, when I was first making the app and designing all the data structures and the concurrency model and everything, when I was first doing all that 10 years ago, I never considered somebody might have 200 podcast subscriptions. I was thinking maybe you'd have 20 or 10 or 5, you know. Sure. Not a lot of people had hundreds of podcast subscriptions in, you know, 2014. But now many people actually have accumulated that many. And so now the app is very, very slow. And so now I know which areas I had to optimize. And that's what I'm doing with the rewrite. But there's other areas of the app where, like, if I optimize something like crazy for something like the display of a settings screen, nobody will ever care. No one will ever notice. It is not a good use of my time. And even, and again, going back to earlier, even the areas like, for instance, if you are slow with large collections, even that, I really didn't need to do that for the first 6 or 7 years of Overcast, really. Sure. Like, that's something that I was able to ship something that was not necessarily incomplete, but certainly not ideal for large collection management. And it did work fine and continues to work fine for many people, but it took until many years in before I had any non-trivial number of customers who actually had large collections and so where that would actually matter. So it was fine for me to ship it in a simpler way with dumber, slower algorithms and simpler models inside the app. That was fine 10 years ago. And now I can fix it now and I can improve it now with the rewrite, but I didn't really need to do all that up front back then. I mean, I wish I had in certain ways, but you know, I couldn't have known that then. And then I was focused on, let's get this app out there. And I wrote the entire initial app in something like a year. And it now, like, the idea, like, I've been working on the rewrite now for so long, way longer than a year. So now the idea of that is kind of it's kind of mind blowing. But yeah, like, I did learn back then, or I learn now looking back at what I did, like, that was the right move back then to ship what I had back then with what I knew back then, even though it was incomplete in some ways. There were many slow, simple algorithms for certain things, but it worked. You know, and there's so many opportunities for, like, micro optimizations that we have today that once you actually run them on a device, you realize this does not matter at all. So, you know, for instance, like, if you need to, you know, keep like, you know, an array versus a set, and you want to see, like, all right, I want to see if this element it already exists in the collection. That's way faster in most cases if you use a set instead of an array. But unless you're dealing with large collections very frequently in some kind of, you know, tight loop in your app, you probably won't notice that difference. And so if there's some other big advantage to that thing being an array instead of a set, when you have to test membership here and there, it's probably going to be fine. Like, you know, and there are so many instances where we kind of get lost in the weeds with algorithmic purity and algorithmic ideology, almost, really, for things that really don't matter very much, while maybe not having enough time as a result to address the things that really do matter, like handling large collections.
Yeah, and I think there's something, I ran into this so many times when I was doing my, like, magic bit in the middle, where my computer, like, I did have a bachelor's degree in computer science. And so, like, I'm trained for what I do, which I know is not everyone who's a developer, you know, has that background where they actually were sort of trained in the sort of the theory of computer programming and algorithms and those kinds of things. And sometimes I feel like that background comes back to bite me, because I have in the back of my mind that there's, you know, I think about the old, you know, sort of like the big O notation. Yep. And
this is order n squared. I cannot possibly ship this.
Exactly. And that is the exact thought that I had when my first night solution to my, like, grouping algorithm for working out, you know, where are the areas that you have offline maps. And the first version I came up with was this very naive, like, just compare the various points to all. It's not like, you know, it's not quite every point to every other point, but it's not that much far from that. It's a slightly clever version of that, but it's like, rather than having this very, like, I started in, you know, investigating all these algorithms you can do with this, you know, convex hull creation of things that works out, and how does it work when the groups are combining, and all, like, it got very complicated very quickly. And I was like, oh, like, I only sort of understand this algorithm that I'm reading about. And if I'd only sort of understand it, the chances of me implementing it successfully and correctly go down dramatically. So let's just start off by let's throw away the complexity and just do the super simple basic thing. And I have a very large offline map down, you know, database with, you know, just thousands and thousands of square miles of mapping tiles. Let's see how fast it is to run. And I build that very straightforward, simple version that does this, you know, this sort of simple grouping, and then the groups combine if, you know, a point exists in multiple groups, and very straightforward. Like, the whole thing is maybe like 40 lines of Swift, like, very, easy to understand, like straightforward algorithm. And I take it and I run it on an iPhone XR with my full, you know, database. And the whole thing took, I think it was 0.2 seconds to run. And it's like, all right, that is good enough.
Yeah.
Like that is, and especially because it's not an operation that the user is doing very often, if at all. And that's on the oldest phone essentially that I support. If I run it on my, you know, on my iPhone, whatever I have, 14, 15, whatever the most recent 15. iPhone is. Yeah,
it's like, there's so many we've lost track.
It is. It's like I run it on that. It's, you know, it's rather than 0.2 seconds, it's like 0.02 seconds. Like it's essentially instantaneous. And it's like, oh, right. That this algorithm is totally fine. I don't need to make this more, you know, more computationally pure and elegant and fancy. This version is fine. And that's amazing. And that's not to say that you should never do the fancy algorithm. Like I have, you know, in my mapping engine, like the thing that actually is rendering the map to the user, which is shown on the Apple Watch, is shown on the iPhone, showed in live activities. Like there's all these places that this mapping engine is used. I do a lot of the really tricky, complicated, you know, algorithm work because that's being updated like once per second and potentially on devices where battery life is really important. And so like I need that code to be super clever, to be super optimized to rather, you know, any kind of waste or inefficiency, I want to get out of it as much as I can so that it's super fast and important. Great, do it there. But it was interesting this time when I started going down this, like, you know, I tend to do this thing where I'm starting to read, not like, you know, sort of articles or Wikipedia posts or things about different algorithms and trying to decide which one makes the most sense. And in the end, it's like, no, don't. Like, just do the simple, obvious, basic thing that you know will, I can understand and then seems to work great. And start there. And if that, you know, if somehow that hadn't worked, if I'd run that on my massive offline database and it had, you know, taken 10 seconds to run, it's like, okay, well, that's not going to work. I'm going to need to do something faster or better, or I need, you know, more magic or a different kind of magic in the middle. But it was definitely a learning experience for me. It's like, just, I shouldn't lean too heavily into those, you know, these courses I took, whatever it was, like 25 years ago, at college, they were telling me, oh, you know, anytime you have an N squared algorithm, it's bad. It's like, no, it's probably fine. Like, I mean, even for reasonably large versions.
It depends on what N is.
Yeah. And it depends on how, like, even that, like, maybe I'm doing 10,000 comparisons or 100,000 comparisons. Like maybe that's what I'm doing. Like it could be a relatively big number or a million comparisons. I don't even know. But the chips that my app is running on can do a million comparisons in a fraction of a second. And so it's just not a problem that you need to solve necessarily unless it's an operation that is happening lots and lots of times. I wouldn't want it to be inefficient every second for 12 hours of a hike. That would be foolish. But if you're going to be slightly inefficient for 0.2 of a second, once every couple of weeks, that's probably fine. And that helps get the app out the door. It helps like me finish off this feature that had been lingering around before. And it means I can move on to, you know, other features and, you know, focusing on things like the UI of the feature, which is way more important in many ways than the, you know, the algorithmic purity of the way that I'm, you know, creating this data.
And rest assured, too, every single other app on your customers' phones is going to be burning all that, like, you know, wasted bandwidth. It's going to be burning that every single time they open the app. Just, like, focusing, like, reporting back to their analytics servers and running their own, like, incredibly heavyweight everything operations that they're doing to track every single possible thing you're doing and serve you ads. Like, what you're doing is a drop in the bucket. I find, like, it's helpful for me to actually, like, you know, load up, like, I have a couple of Overcast test accounts that I can log into that have hundreds of thousands of podcast episodes, like, just huge collections that, like, for the most part, I don't think any user would actually have a collection that big. And I can load it up in the old code where it just basically freezes and crashes, and I can load it up in the new code where it's a little heavy, but it works. And I'm like, okay, now I've tried the extreme. Like, that's the thing. You try the extreme with something that you think is going to be too slow. And if the extreme case is usable, you're probably okay. Especially, like, yeah, when you then go back to the common case and it takes 0.2 seconds. Like, it's fine. You're going to be fine. That's the theme for this episode is, like, get it to work. It's probably fine. And move on. You can always come back later.
Yes, and I think having that freedom to come back later is absolutely a key thing to being able to ship things in the first place.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.